Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Meta. I'm your host, Jay Larson, and joining me this week, I have a very special guest, one Tom Bell. Hello, Tom.
Hi there.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks for asking.
Awesome. So, Tom, could you introduce yourself a little bit?
Hi, I'm Tom, also known as Luck God around and about on the internet. I've been playing War Machine Hordes since about when Colossals came out, roughly. Always been a Signar player. Dabbled in Mercs and Minions, but I'm a Signar player through and through. And I'm also quite into RightQuest and IKRPG.
So your name was one that was suggested by the patrons, and so contacted you, and you were gracious enough to accept the invitation to come on. So I'm excited for us to have a discussion with each other. One part that you left off that we can do a little bit of self-promotion for you starting off. I noticed that you recently had your blog retweeted by Privateer Press.
Yeah, they do that from time to time.
That you have been doing some terrain painting. So could you maybe talk a little bit about each of those a little bit?
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm quite lucky in that Privateer Press, even though, like, in my personal, you know, self disbelief of myself, I guess, I'm just some small hobbyist. But Privateer Press occasionally do retweet or share some of the stuff I did. They even had me write an insider for them back when the Oblivion theme remix happened. I wrote the one for the Sons of the Tempest theme for them. The terrain is, I for anyone that hasn't seen it, I recently did a terrain piece which was a Waldrath that's been destroyed and is half buried by soil over the years or whatever. And it's for a terrain competition that a very good hobbyist and Twitch streamer called Riker Zion has been doing this terrain competition. So you have to make some terrain from scraps. You can't use a terrain kit. And I decided, seeing as I had these bits of a Waldrath, what a better way to do than to make terrain out of that. And when I cut it in half to try and bury it in the ground, I thought, I might as well use the other half. And it didn't make sense to have two halves of a Waldrath. It would look like two Waldraths, right?
Right, yeah.
So I'm giving away one half of it to one of the people that follows and supports me with my work. So, yeah, I'm just going to give it away.
So where can they follow and support you at?
Well, that's specifically for either people that support me on Patreon or on Twitch via Twitch subscribers. So either of those.
Okay, and I assume is that can be listed under Luck God or
I'm Luck God on I'm Luck God on everywhere on the internet, really.
Okay,
always have been.
So everyone, feel free to check that out, and thank you for, I guess, sharing your time and creative endeavors with all of us. That was fun to be able to see.
Yeah, thanks.
So, real quick again, a review of the format. We'll talk to each other for about 45-50 minutes, and then continue the conversation in the bonus episode for people that support the Patreon. But starting off, Tom had a special request in the hopes that we all know that Hungerford, there's few things that he loves more than a visual meme shared over an audio format. And so Tom requested that I do that again in honor of Hungerford.
Yeah.
And so this meme, there is a skeleton that is, you know, bellied up to the bar. He's got a bottle of booze next to him. Three dead soldiers of he's already gotten through some drinks. He's in his cups. Looks forlorn and morose. And the caption is, when you realize you're not the spooky faction anymore.
Brilliant. I really do hope he listens to this.
That would be pretty fantastic.
Yep.
All right. So we have a bunch of questions for you. Most of them are related to Signar. I'll probably have some Signar questions for you as well, but I'll also likely end up asking a bunch about the IKRPG or Riot Quest as well. So.
Sure.
All right. So Joji says, what's holding back Signar? So I guess the first question is, do you even agree with the assumption of that statement that Signar is currently being held back?
Well, first of all, I should preface this with I'm unlike some of the other great guests that I've heard on the meta, because I do listen to the podcast as well. I'm not some big, huge tournament winning player. I don't have the income to travel to big events, so I only play in local tournaments. I do well, usually place or win, but I just want to preface this from the start. I am your average player. I do write a lot, which is probably why I got requested to come on. I don't actually think anything's holding Signar back, in all honesty. I think Signar's a competitive faction. I don't think that it's like top three, but I think that's fine. That not everybody can be the best faction, and the best faction fluctuates anyway. So,
I guess a couple follow-up questions on this. So, and I guess these are both kind of interrelated. Do you feel like Signar's been okay for a while, or because there's definitely a perception before Flames in the Darkness released that Signar was kind of bottom of the barrel at the time. And did you feel like that was the case at that time, or did you feel like Flames of Darkness gave them a big boost that brought them a little bit more up to parity?
I definitely agree with that last statement. The Flames releasing and being as good as it is really did give the faction a boost. I wouldn't say, and this is just my personal perspective, I wouldn't say Signar's ever been bottom of the barrel. Mid-tier for quite a long time. I think once you got things like the Legion Primal Terrors and the Circle Devourer's Host coming out and making people tech specifically for like Tough and for things like that, it kind of really knocked our best theme at the time, Gravediggers, on the head a bit, which gave the perspective that Signar was not quite as good as it could have been. But the thing is, we just didn't have an easy win button anymore. That's how it feels, at least.
I think that also one of the things that happened in that time frame was that, you know, there was Signar was one of the first factions to go through the CID to get a big wave of releases. They had the Trenchers that came out, and then it felt like there were a lot of people who had played Signar who and I guess I should also say a lot of people who had prominently played Signar who decided that, like, they're, you know, they own multiple factions and they were just ready to play something else, have a change of pace, etc. And it's a little bit easier to do that when your faction has had their big update quite a while ago. And so I think that there was a little bit of a factor of that. And there was a perception that Signar was kind of not doing too well. But, I kind of wonder if some of it was people not playing. And then also one of the things that I remember that surprised me a fair bit was that the last WTC was before Flames of Darkness was really a thing. And in most predictions, people thought that Signar would do pretty poorly, but the people who actually played Signar actually did fairly well with the faction at the WTC. And so I'm curious what, I mean, I just kind of went off for a while there, but I'm curious what your thoughts were on what I just said.
So with because we all knew before last year's WCC that there weren't as many Signal players as there historically have been. But I would probably imagine that the ones that did play Signar are people who have consistently played Signar for a long time, and therefore they have that edge of knowing their casters better than the person against them on the other side of the table. I'm a big believer in you can play a caster that isn't considered an S rank caster. You can play like a B or C rank caster. If you know them really, really well, you can beat things that people wouldn't think you'd beat when they're just, you know, comparing the two lists on paper.
Yeah, I mean, I know some people who, whether it was because they believed that a certain faction was really strong, or they thought that a certain faction would kind of offset the weaknesses of their team really well. And I know several who kind of like jumped into that faction kind of late in the season, pretty early before WTC, and in general their results weren't that good. And so I do think that does lead some credence to, you know, what you're saying there.
Well, I think there's a reason why the big WTC players try and get hundreds of reps in with a single caster, because yeah. That muscle memory that it forms allows you to get around problems that if you were just jumping on the new hotness, you might not have encountered or considered yet.
All right. So now that we've dodged the first part of Joji's question, his next part says, which caster pair would you recommend for someone interested in learning how to play Signar well?
Personally, I think that a really good pairing at the minute that would be accessible as well, Striker 2 in Flames and then Siege 1 in, honestly, whichever other faction you visually like the look of. I think Siege 1 can play in any of the other themes, honestly.
Okay. Next question is from Dragon Pup. He says, mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on the Iron Kingdoms RPG moving to 5th edition?
So I'm actually writing a My Thoughts article on this for my blog, so I have been thinking about it. I have been thinking about it already. It's mixed feelings for me. Part of me, the part of me that's poor, is slightly sad because I've got all the D6 version books already. I own them all. Mm. So they're suddenly a lot less useful. But I also am quite excited because, nerd confession, I've never played D&D before. I've GM'd IKRPG for years, but I've never played D&D. So one of my players will be introing it for me so I can get a feel for what it's like. But I figure it being D&D makes it more accessible to people, especially people outside of the War Machine community, and it might get them into the war game.
Yeah. So what sort of role playing background or experience do you have?
Just IKRPG. I'll be honest with you. That's the only one I've played.
And so have you only played the more recent edition of the RPG?
Yeah, I picked it up, I think it's 8 years ago now? Coming up for 8 years ago. I think it came out in, like, September or something like that. Yeah, so I've been playing that.
Awesome. A small digression. For the listeners who might not be aware, Privateer Press started as a company who made a... So way back in... these many years ago,
I think it was 20 years ago, because they said that the company's been running 20 years now, so it was their first product, wasn't it?
Yeah. So they D&D 3rd edition had the open gaming license. People could, you know, create product for D&D and modules, adventure settings, etc. And so War Machine initially started as the Iron Kingdoms and with the Witchfire trilogy featuring Alexia. And so you know, Privateer Press has roots in D&D, obviously. They've obviously changed a lot as a company since then, but it's pretty exciting for them to be returning to making some products for D&D, in my opinion. So I've played a fair number of different role playing games. I've played a lot of 3rd and 3.5 D&D. I played just a small bit of 4th, and I haven't really played any 5th edition at all.
Okay.
And there's lots of people that are really that really love 5th edition D&D, and it's obviously it's having a very big cultural moment right now. I've been a little bit skeptical of it because I'm in general a little bit more of a fan of less combat heavy role playing systems, and in general it feels like D&D kind of lends itself to being more combat heavy, but
that's interesting because I haven't had the comparison. One of the criticisms often aimed at the D6 IKRPG is that it's so combat focused because they basically transplanted the combat rules from the War Machine game.
Mm.
But I've actually been finding that it's more what the GM does with the system. Yeah. So like, yes, there might not be rules for certain things, but you can just say, okay, roll this stat, or roll against your strength, or you can just pick what you want to do. So to hear that D&D is quite combat focused now makes me think that it's actually not that different, really, in terms of how it's going to play.
That I think that's fairly possible. I mean, and again, I'm not as familiar with 5th edition, but there's been a lot of editions of D&D where it's basically been like you have your grid that your miniatures are on, and this is how big my spell AoE is, etc. And so it's I am interested to see how it develops. But I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about that later on in the podcast.
Yeah.
So a follow-up question that Dragon Pup has is, what classes are you hoping they will announce?
Oh man, I'll be honest. We know that they're going to do the very very iconic stuff. Like they've already mentioned that they've done Storm Knight. You know that they're going to do gun mages because they're so iconic to the setting.
Right.
So I think Ironhead. Ironhead's. I'm unfortunately a forever GM. So that's what I'd play if I got the chance, is just play a mad tinkering Ironhead that gets to create his own suit and craft random bits onto it and add bits all over the place. So yeah, an Ironhead, I think.
I remember in the old edition of the IKRPG, the one that was D&D, you had normal classes, and then you had prestige classes, and prestige classes were basically classes that you couldn't start out in as your base class. And you had to qualify for them. And one of the prestige classes that they developed for the IKRPG was the Scrutator prestige class.
Oh, right.
And one of the prerequisite skills that you had to have leveled up to be able to become a Scrutator was the torture skill.
That does not surprise me.
Yeah, so for those who are maybe not as up with like the different titles or stuff like that, in War Machine, a Scrutator is a priest in the Protectorate of Menoth. So
they're a bit like the Inquisition from the olden days.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so Zap Brannigan says, do you think Sons of the Tempest has a place in a competitive pairing?
Yes. Yes, I do. I am a big believer in the theme, and I've been shouting it from the rooftops for many years. I believe that it does have a place in a competitive pairing. It certainly has its weaknesses. But I think that the strengths that it does have are worth bringing to a list pairing.
So is Suns a theme list that's kind of been a specialty or a hobby of yours? You had mentioned that you had written.
Yeah. So
an insider about it.
Yeah, that's the way it all started is I think it was February 2017. The Privateer Press released a bunch of themes all at once, and one of the themes that got released was Sons of the Tempest, and the more important theme that got released that day was Ghost Fleet. And I at the time had a couple of WCT players, one of them Irish, and if he ever hears this, he knows I'm talking about him. He jumped on Ghost Fleet day one, unlike a lot of people that waited until it won a tournament before realizing how good it was. And I'd turn up every Tuesday to game night and get a kicking every single week because Ghost Fleet was really, really good.
Mm.
And I tried all sorts to try and counter it. I tried Striker 2. I tried Nemo 3. I tried Siege, and I kept finding that one of the biggest problems was just getting my casty killed by Denny just knocking you down, and then you get shot to death. So I tried Haley 1, and Haley 1 camping 3 focus cannot be knocked down by Denny 1. And it turns out...
The reason for that is she can Arcane Vortex.
Yeah, she has Arcane Vortex. Yeah. Okay. Exactly that. So she can cancel a spell cast at her for the cost of one focus off her, but they still have to pay the full cost for the spell. So one of her really big strengths is you can just look at the opponent's spell card, see what the spells that they might want to cast at you, and then camp enough so that they can't do it. Okay. Typically, you'll only really have to cast camp three against most normal casters. So I figured what list benefits most from her toolbox, which is things like Deadeye and her feet granting an additional attack. And I figured, let's just hit the Gunmage button until they all go red. And at the time, you could put every single thing Gunmage at max FA except for Tempest Blazers. And so I just did that because I owned them all anyway. And it turns out it tabled Ghost Fleet without any real trouble at all. No RFP in the list at all, but just the volume of fire is enough, and the threat range and the accuracy just tabled it. Because when you've got a unit of 7 gun mages putting out 14 shots on feet turn,
right,
and you've got 2 units of them, then the Black 13th as well, Tempest Blazers can put out 10 shots that all have E-leap, so that's 20 potential dead models. And after that, I just started, because I kept it in my pair to deal with Ghost Fleet, I just decided to see what else it can deal with. So I ran into pretty much anything. I played it into Gatsby 3, and it worked. Back when Gatsby 3 was terrorizing the meta, I was knocking down his slayers and pushing them around and winning on scenario. Because it turns out one of her other spells, Scramble, which, for anyone that doesn't know, is cost 2, and just all it does is it disrupts a warjack. Turns out when you've got a hurricane and you can just pop out a scramble on 1 or 2 slayers, and then you knock down 3 of them with your hurricane slam guns, and then you push them all away with gun mages so they can't threaten the hurricane at all ever, you eventually win.
So you had mentioned that you felt like it was a list that in current pairings was still viable, and that it had still some strong matchups. What are some examples of matchups that you would be looking for in kind of the modern meta that's happening right now?
Well, I should preface this with, currently there is no meta for me,
sure,
because I live in a garbage country where they decided to go with herd immunity. So I guess I'll look at it from a bit of a more wider angle of just like, what do I or don't I want to see when I drop it?
Sure. Yeah.
So it's great into infantry, obviously. It doesn't particularly like high arm single wound infantry. So it wouldn't particularly like to play against things like Flames with Legion of Lost Souls, but if they were running the Vigilance version or the Resolutes version, it's fine with either of those. It doesn't want to see Immortals ever. I haven't played it into the new Strange Bedfellows yet, but if they're running the All Angels list, I think it's probably okay because they're all fairly low armor.
Real quick, let me pause and rewind a little bit.
Yep.
First off, I'm assuming that most of the listeners probably haven't played much against this theme force because it's not very popular.
Yeah, fair enough.
So what are some of the theme benefits that that you have with this?
See, this is really weird because it has two theme benefits, but only one of them is really relevant. So one of them is that the Warcaster can upkeep spells on Arcane Tempest models units for free. It barely ever comes up. The only corner case is if you're playing a snipe caster, but yeah, it's a non-benefit really. The big benefit for the Sons of the Tempest theme is the Arcane Tempest Guardmage units and the Black 13th gain Pistolier, which basically gives them boosted damage rolls when using Gunfighter. And one of the reasons why this is really, really important is a lot of War Machine players have kind of been programmed to rush gun lines because they go, well, as soon as I engage you, you can't shoot as well or threaten further back pieces. But when you rush Sons of the Tempest, you're essentially upping my damage because suddenly I'm getting 3 dice damage instead of 2 dice damage. And then with the regular gun mage units, they have a gunshot, which is critical brutal damage. And Haley, one, has Deadeye, so she can give them 3 dice to hit to increase the chances of getting the crit, and suddenly they're rolling 4 dice damage. So all of a sudden, that little pal 10 starts doing a lot more damage than it used to.
Mm.
And when you're doing it 14 times per unit, the chances of crits and the chances of spikes on those damage dice... Yeah, yeah. I've had people start swearing at my dice because eventually you start rolling... It just happens. The averages work out eventually, and you kill things you shouldn't kill.
So, one other thing I wanted to dig a little deeper on. You had said that the gun mages don't really want anything to do with immortals. Yes. What is it particularly about that matchup that is kind of problematic?
Well, like I prophesied earlier, the gun mages do better damage when you're engaged. But the problem with immortals is you can't, because they've got fairly decent armor on the approach, and the list can be built to exacerbate that even further. Your POW 10s, because the main damage buff in the theme is only range 8 spray gun on Falk. So you're going to be hitting them with POW 10s at long range. And because of the high armor of the Immortals, you're unlikely to kill many. And then you're triggering Vengeance, which means they're much more likely to get in at you and attack you rather than run to engage. And once those Immortals get in amongst the gun mages, they just slaughter them all. And to top it all off, you can't push them. Because the theme benefit says no pushes, so
you can't
stall them out on scenario like other armies.
Okay.
Luckily, Flames goes reasonably well into that. So
right. So you talked a little bit about Sons of the Tempest into Flames. What were some other matchups or things that you're looking for when playing Sons of the Tempest, or looking to avoid as well? I guess.
So when I'm looking at their pairing and deciding what to drop, if they have lots of high armor, so you never see this theme, but it's the theme that I would never want to drop gun mages into. It's the Iron Fang Pikeman theme. Mm. I would, because they're relatively cheap. Same with the Temple Flame Guard in Protector, actually. They're relatively high armor and they're cheap. So even if you kill a couple on the approach, there's going to be enough to engage all your gun mages and kill them. Lists with lots of decent blast weapons. So, like, if you're seeing Judicator and a Redeemer. I think they're Redeemers. I get mixed up with the Protectorate Jacks because they're all something.
Yeah, the Redeemer's the light with the rocket pod
that yeah.
shoots long range.
So if you're seeing like a list with Adjudicator and one or two Redeemers, it's probably not going to go too well for you because gun mages have really low armor and no defensive tech, really. So lists like that, I would look to not drop them in. Lists that I do like dropping them into is the ones that people think will end well for them, but actually don't. Battle group heavy lists, gun mages do really well into, and people don't think that they will. I've played them into, like I say, Gatsby 3. Karchev is another great example, because turns out when you're knocked down, you can't charge. And the brilliant thing about the way gun mages work is Death 14 isn't as good as they used to be, but a lot of heavies are mat 7 or lower, usually mat 7, which means they're 50% of the time they're hitting, roughly. So 50% of the time, your warjack doesn't kill a squishy little gun mage. And if you just stagger your screening line, so you've got like two gun mages up front and then the rest hanging back, yes, you lose those two, but they've traded far, far too many points to kill a couple of gun mages. And you can then use the control effects and the big damage once you get engaged with them to stall out and then slowly win on scenario. I often have to give up one or two points early in the game. So you also don't want to see an army that can do extreme control effects against you.
Mm.
Because the gun mage list wants to let them get a little bit ahead on scenario at the beginning, so you don't... Like, for example, turn two, I wouldn't bother contesting their side of the board at all, because there's nothing in the list that can contest meaningfully. And by contest meaningfully, I personally mean you run it over there and it lives.
Mm-hmm.
So the way I tend to play it is if they've got one thing in, say they've got a rectangular zone and they've only put one warjack in it, if I can get a gun mage within range to just thunderbolt it out, I'll do that instead. So I haven't killed to stop them scoring. I've just pushed it away to stop them scoring. It's the same with flags. So like, instead of running a model within four to contest a flag, I'd rather move a gun mage up and push them away.
Mm.
So even if I don't kill them, I've stopped them scoring their own flag, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
So maximizing defensive scoring while trying to deny their scoring, and then whatever they send in to try and contest mine usually dies. So
the follow-up question that mm-hmm. Zap Brannigan had was, what casters would you run in Sons of the Tempest?
Haley 1 is the best caster in Sons of the Tempest, in my opinion, followed by Siege 1 and Cray. But Haley 1 is, she's the queen of gun mages. She just, everything that they want, she does. Giving them double the output means that the expensive models are giving you more. And when you're doubling their output and they all have control effects or different abilities, it just really ups their value. For example, the Gunmade Captain Adepts, they're 5 points for one shot, essentially, normally. But getting two shots with, they've got four different effects that they can choose from, and they can choose two at any one time. So the typical thing for me is they have Flare and they have Shadow Fire. So they can really enable the rest of the army to get at whatever you want it to get at. So it's very hard to hide high value models from the Sons of the Tempest list, because on Haley's feat turn, I essentially have four Shadow Fires or four Flares to put wherever I want.
So I remember somewhat early in Mark III, they did a dynamic update where they gave Haley 1 a slight nerf, and yep. and everyone was just like, what's going on here? Like, no one's been like rampaging, you know, the meta with Haley 1. Why is she getting this adjustment? And so are we finally finding out that all this time you've been the cause of the Haley 1 nerf?
I can very strongly suggest that it wasn't me, because the changes that they made to her was they dropped her warjack points by one, and they changed Temple Barrier, which was an abusive spell in Mark 2, but in Mark 3 not so much, because just for anyone listening that doesn't know, Temple Barrier reads, while in the spellcaster's control area, enemy models suffer minus 2 defense. Enemy models beginning their activations in the control area suffer minus 2 speed. And in Mark 2, if you had a negative to your speed, you couldn't charge. And it was borderline broken into a melee army because they just could never really do anything. In Mark 3, I think what you're talking about was about 2 or 3 years ago. They changed it so that the speed debuff wasn't in her control range anymore. It's now in her command range, and her command range is 8. So yeah, I've never had that come up, because if an enemy model is starting within 8 of Haley, they're going to kill her, even with the minus 2 speed. It's just,
yeah,
it's,
I mean, points. Yeah, you're not wrong.
I've honestly, in the last 3 years, I've hundreds of games with Haley won, and I've cast Temple Barrier probably 10 times, and every single time it's on turn 1, and not every single time, 90% of the time it's on turn 1, and it's when somebody's done something like been extremely aggressive with a quick stalker lightjack and they've run it forward into a trench and threatening my whole army. So I will pop Temple Barrier to reduce its defense, put Deadeye on a Gunmage Captain Adept, and then have him try and flare it to reduce its defense even further. That's pretty much the only use for it, because it costs 4 focus.
So what are the, if you're not casting Temporal Barrier, what in general are you using Haley's resources on when you're playing her?
So just to make this a little bit easier for people to visualize, my list that I've been running for quite a long time and haven't changed, I might change it soon, but the list for a long, long time has been Haley with a Hurricane, 2 Gunmage Captain Adepts, Bastion Falk, 2 Gunmage Riflemen, 2 units of Gunmages with the Command Attachment, a unit of Tempest Blazers, and the Black 13th. Now, what I typically do with Haley turn by turn, so turn 1, she'll put Arcane Shield on the Hurricane. Then turns 2, 3, she's casting 1 to 2 Deadeyes onto either the Blazers or the Gunmage units to increase their accuracy, try and get crits, things like that. If there's a decent target for a scramble and I want to control a Warjack that I don't think I can reasonably kill, I'll just spend 2 focus to disrupt it, and then I don't need to worry about it for a turn. Arcane Bolt and Chain Lightning are basically dead spells, as is Temple Barrier. So she might chuck out a hand cannon shot, but pretty much she's just walking up and casting Deadeye. And most crucially, ending her turn within 3 inches of the Hurricane, with it blocking line of sight from her to the opposing army. So she sits behind the Hurricane and basically makes it so the opponent can never debuff the Hurricane with a spell, because she'll just Arcane Vortex it off. Right. And I will specifically look at the other person's spell list and see how much their debuffs cost, and then divide that by the focus and go, oh, so he can cast that spell 3 times, so I'm going to camp 3, and then you can never debuff the Hurricane now. The only way it can be debuffed is by the spells that don't target, such as like Ragman or the Hermit. They can still debuff it. Also anything that does Dark Shroud, but all of the ones where they have to target you, they just can't do it. Also, you can't have your Arcane Shield stripped by things like Hexbolt. So it's pretty good.
So I remember when the Hurricane came out that there was like this inner part of me that felt a little bit sad that, like, I'd hoped that the Arcanode rule on the Colossal, that since it's this, you know, huge honking Colossal, that it wouldn't have the prohibition of channeling spells while stuff is in melee with it.
Yeah.
And it made me kind of sad that special rule was never added. But I guess I'm curious, how much has that come up in your experience when playing the Hurricane?
Very rarely, because one of the one of the things that I find is very important when I'm playing this list is the Hurricane is your anchor and must be protected until you've removed like all the threats that can run around it. So like I will only send the Hurricane into melee when it wins me the game, or when I know I'm sending it in on something and then there isn't enough left to want to kill it in one round. So it's very rare that the enemy is able to get anything into melee with my Hurricane that I can't kill. So like any light infantry, the gun mages are always nearby enough that they can just step in, kill it, and then Swift Hunter out of the way.
Okay.
So, and also, like, when arcing spells, she's not really arcing spells at the enemy enough. Like, she has Scramble, but she doesn't need to cast Scramble enough that it's going to cost you the game. And I usually have her 3 inches behind the Hurricane anyway, so it's not buffing my spell range by that much.
Yeah. I'm assuming that part of the reason or logic behind what they did was casters like Striker 1, where the Hurricane could be up in the mix, be engaged. You could arc a Earthquake off of the...
Yeah, that would be pretty powerful.
The arc note and not have your Colossal be knocked down. And so, like, I can understand some of the reasons why they made the choices that they did, but there's also still just a part of me that wishes that had happened.
Yeah, I can understand that.
All right, so I don't think we're necessarily done talking about Sons of the Tempest, but is there any, I guess, is there any preview, or I mean, maybe we are, I don't know. Is there any preview of other parts of this list that you can tell people that we're going to be covering in the next episode?
Well, one of the things that I think is quite fun about gun mages is the threat ranges that they can put out. And when the opposing player says, "What's your max threat range?" and I get to say 25 inches. So, yeah, I'll explain that in the next one then.
Okay, great. All right, so a few things real quick. We want to thank everyone who supports the podcast on Patreon and hope that those of you who enjoy it can consider supporting it as well. Also, you can check out Muse on Minis and Discount Games Inc. for your gaming accessories. Tom, can you remind people your username and where your content's found out?
Yeah, sure. So I'm LuckGod or LuckGod84 on Twitch, YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. And my main source of all my content is usually on my blog, which is Wargaming with LuckGod on Blogger. Pretty much just Google LuckGod and you'll find my stuff.
Awesome. Okay. Well, thank you very much for doing this episode with me, Tom, and I'm looking forward to continuing our discussion in the next episode.
Pleasure.